It's 7:44. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Chuck Anzalevich. A coalition of conservation groups is suing the Trump administration over changes to a 100-year-old law protecting migrating birds. Late last year, the administration announced a seemingly minor change to just two words in the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. As Brittany Patterson reports, those two little words have big implications for thousands of birds that migrate over the Ohio Valley.
On a recent chilly Tuesday morning, about 20 people filed along a winding dirt path leading deeper into West Virginia University's Arboretum in Morgantown. Armed with binoculars, smartphones, and hiking boots, the group is determined to spot and identify the chittering birds hidden in the trees above.
There's a good local bird singing. They do migrate south and come back in the spring, but he'll nest here. The one says, drink your tea. Right there, you hear it? Listen.
Over the next 2 hours, the birders will identify more than a dozen species. Bay-breasted warblers, Swainson's thrush, and yes, that eastern towhee. Many have returned from the sun-drenched forests of Central America to nest up north during spring migration. Migratory birds are important ecological and economical drivers. Each year, birders spend an estimated $41 billion on trips and equipment. And birds serve as the proverbial canary in the coal mine for our ecosystems.
These birds are supposed to be honest indicators of our natural world and the environment. And so when their populations are suffering, that might be an indication that something is not right in the environment.
That's Christopher Latuma, an assistant professor and wildlife biologist at WVU. Latuma says that for the last century, the Migratory Bird Treaty Act has protected more than 1,000 species, including that towhee we heard.
It is kind of an umbrella law. It's kind of a catch-all law for migratory birds. But it's an important one because I think it forces entities to be accountable for their actions, at least as they relate to birds.
But one component of the law has become controversial. It's something called incidental take. That's when birds are unintentionally killed by something, a building, power lines, wind turbines, or the containment ponds associated with oil and gas drilling. These open pits near oil and gas operations often contain toxic drilling fluids, but birds don't know that. At the Avian Conservation Center of Appalachia, near Morgantown, West Virginia, Jesse and Katie Fallon treat and rehabilitate sick and injured birds, like this oil-covered pied-billed grebe. The small brown migratory water bird was fished out of a pond at a fracking site somewhere nearby.
He was just drenched in it. He had several baths with Dawn dish soap that, you know, he wasn't too fond of us bathing him with the dish soap, but he was happy to float in the water and try to preen.
Preening is when birds run their beaks over their feathers trying to clean them off, which causes them to inadvertently ingest some of the material.
And in the case of oil, that's toxic. So this bird trying to keep himself clean, he was poisoning himself at the same time.
Video on the center's Facebook page showed the grebe seemed to enjoy a nice warm blow dry after a scrub in the tub. But as is the case with most of the birds the Fallons receive from oil and gas operations, within a day, the grebe had died. Until recently, Jesse says someone could have been held responsible for the bird's death.
By the Migratory Bird Treaty Act being able to be applied towards incidental take, that would encourage companies, from a financial perspective, to cover their ponds. Now we have to rely essentially on the common sense and the conservation mindset of those companies.
Since the 1970s, the federal government has sometimes chosen to prosecute operators using the incidental take provision. More often, the Fish and Wildlife Service works with industry to prevent deaths by installing nets over oil and gas ponds and changing lights on wind turbines to attract fewer birds. In December, the Interior Department took prosecution off the table. It announced incidental take would no longer be banned. In its legal opinion, the agency said the provision hangs the sword of Damocles over the head of industry. Lowell Rothschild is an environmental lawyer with more than 20 years of experience representing the oil and gas sector. He says the law's broad framing poses challenges.
The Migratory Bird Treaty Act is it's difficult to comply with, And it's also difficult to equitably administer.
Oil and gas industry group, the Independent Petroleum Association of America, praised the change and said the previous interpretation of incidental take expanded the law beyond its original goals and placed blame on lawful industries. But for advocates of the law, the change raises red flags. Interior's move prompted backlash from 17 former agency officials who served under Republican and Democratic administrations. In a letter, they wrote the new interpretation of the law, quote, creates a huge loophole. Eric Schneider is a policy analyst for Audubon, and he agrees.
While not every case is going to be enforced, I think by having a number of fines in the past, by having that potential is really what brings these companies to the table.
A coalition of national environmental groups recently sued the Interior Department. They argue the agency exceeded its authority when it decided the law only applies to the purposeful killing of birds and not incidental take. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Brittany Patterson in Morgantown, West Virginia.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. When something goes wrong in the gas fields, like a spill or an explosion, somebody has to clean up the mess. Mike Chica gets these calls. He says this work can be hard and dirty.
We've had times where we've had to build roads in the side of mountains. We've brought in 30, 40 foot pipes to be able to put through culverts to divert the flow of streams and rivers, and then bring in thousands of tons of stone to be able to build a road proper to get to the spill.
Chica is a field supervisor for McCutcheon Enterprises. That company handles industrial waste and responds to hazardous materials incidents. He started a recent workday at McCutcheon's waste processing facility in Apollo, northeast of Pittsburgh. For State Impact Pennsylvania's Voices of Energy series, he talks about his role in the energy industry before driving to Ohio to check on the site of a recent explosion at a natural gas well.
When it was happening, the well was on fire. We were looking at a couple hundred feet worth of flame shooting into the atmosphere. It's hectic. It's scary. Right now, it's a different type of site. Everything's shut in. It looks like any other typical drill site you go to. But there's still things on that site that need attention. Sampling on the pad, finding out where the contamination led to, and finding out the correct actions that need taken to remediate that pad. What we would first do when we arrive on a site is I would assess the situation, either with the Turnpike Commission, DEP, any type of Pennsylvania official that might be on site. We would work to protect the public, then we would protect the environment, then we'd be looking to do the spill cleanup itself. It could be a couple hours, it could take to a couple months. We've been on some sites where it's taken us close to a year. Just a couple little things I have in here. I can grab some more. We have personal meters for each one of our employees, so they can take these on scene anytime we arrive. We also have what we call our model Ludlam 19. It's a radiation detector. We have several of these vehicles, emergency response vehicles that come loaded with any tools that we would need, any type of oil absorbent, pads, an upright that we would need, drums, lighting, generators. Not only do we supervise, but we might be the ones that have to drive the CDL vehicles to the site. We might need to be the operators that run the CDL truck. Whenever we have a load of waste, we bring it back in McCutcheon, if that was our approved waste facility to bring it to. And we have a wastewater treatment side, and we also have a solidification side. We do have a dirty job. I know we all sometimes watch that Mike Rowe Dirty Jobs, and we're one of those companies. Before I came up here for this interview, I was sitting in dispatch, and we just got called out to go on a rig cleaning. Some of our guys aren't happy right now they're going on it, but that's part of our industry. They're going to get muddy. They're going to get dirty. They're going to have oil-based mud on them. It's a drilling rig. They need to empty all the drilling muds out, wash the rig and then move it to another location. So we go in there and we clean the mud tanks out. I can say I have a 12-year-old daughter and a young nieces, and I'm doing my part in their generation. I'm proud to have a positive role in their future in the environment.
That was Mike Chicka. His story was produced by Amy Sisk for State Impact Pennsylvania, a collaboration between WHYY, WITF, WESA, and the Allegheny Front to cover stories about the energy economy. To hear more voices of energy, visit State Impact Pennsylvania online. Spring brings flocks of migrating birds from South and Central America through the northern Appalachian region. It's Christmas for birders to do early morning trips with binoculars to spot the migrants, but a changing climate means some birds could disappear from view. State Impact Pennsylvania's Susan Phillips goes out in the woods to learn how climate change impacts what we see and hear.
Birders see first with their ears.
Hearing a yellow warbler now above us. People sometimes describe its song as being like sweet, 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 a little more sweet.
Bill Kunze runs the Nature Conservancy in Pennsylvania. Today he's leading a group of birders counting migrating birds at the John Hines National Wildlife Refuge in Southwest Philadelphia.
It's easiest to try to see the bird first without the binoculars, like see the motion, and then raise your binoculars up as opposed to trying to find the bird with your binoculars. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay.
1,000 acres of marsh, woodlands, and meadows is what's left of what was once about 6,000 acres of freshwater wetlands known as the Tinicum Marsh. The bulk of those wetlands have been paved over to make way for the Philadelphia Airport, oil refineries, and housing developments. Tall white egrets wade in the pond and painted turtles sunbathe on logs as low-flying airplanes soar overhead and traffic from I-95 can be heard in the distance.
So right now I'm hearing a great crested flycatcher at the top of the trees out here going weep, weep.
The refuge is part of what's called the Atlantic Flyway, and it's an important stopover for birds making their way from the south each spring. Some stop here to breed. For others, it's just a resting point.
A lot of people think that birds migrate because of temperature, it gets cold or hot. What it's really about is about food.
Kunze says the birds that come north in the spring are looking to feed on the explosion of insects and plant life that takes place during North American summers. But a warming planet is changing what we see at our bird feeders and in our forests. Insects and plants emerge in the spring based on temperature, but birds start to fly north based on the change in the amount of daylight. It's a disconnect that threatens hundreds of species across North America.
So there's a beautiful synchronicity between the timing of when they migrate, the areas they go to, and the food that will be available there. And climate change can change that connection.
Kunze says that helps some species but hurts far more. His friend and fellow birder, John Harding, is already seeing changes.
I never had red-bellied woodpeckers breeding 30 years ago at my deer hunting camp.
I remember when I was growing up around here, you never saw a black vulture. That was a southern bird.
That's a great example. Yeah.
And now you see black vultures all over the place, everywhere, in addition to our turkey vultures.
A National Audubon Society report predicts that more than 300 North American birds will lose more than half of their current range by 2080 due to climate change. Kunze says the impacted birds have two choices: move up in elevation or move further up in North America. And some species are more adaptable than others.
So we're going to see more and more blue jays and crows and cowbirds and pigeons. We're going to see fewer and fewer of these migrating warblers of wood thrush, veery, and of other birds like that.
And he says they continue to lose habitat.
Pipelines or roads or lots of other kinds of development fragment the forest. And as we slice and dice the forest, we're ruining the habitat for these birds. There's a big difference between 1,000 one-acre islands and 1,000-acre intact parcel.
One bird song that Kunze says he's hearing less and less is the song of the wood thrush.
For us to lose this sound out of our forest would just be tragic. Let me play it for you.
Kunze brings up the song on his phone.
It's related to a robin. It's about the shape of a robin, a little bit smaller. And this is its song.
As Kunze plays the recording, all the birders break out in smiles. I'm Susan Phillips, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Chuck Anzalevich.